man, not quite the ACC start to the basketball season that we may have been anticipating, but the Tar Heels are 1-1 after two games on the road. Welcome into Tar Heel Talk. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, Stephen Tram from the Fayetteville Observer joining us on this edition of Tar Heel Talk. And the Georgia Tech game on the road on New Year's Eve luckily was overshadowed by a lot of good college football, but maybe not really for those diehard Tar Heel fans who were still licking their wounds from that Stanford game, which may have been the last game of the Mitch Trubisky era at North Carolina. Still awaiting word on that as of this recording. But we have got a lot to walk through with that bowl game against Stanford and the state of the football program a little bit, but certainly starting to shift a lot more attention to the basketball team here for the Tar Heels. Two games into ACC play now, a loss against Georgia Tech, which really looked like a lackadaisical effort from the Tar Heels. Went to Clemson on Tuesday night, able to come away with a victory in overtime. But Ross, should people be concerned from what they've seen over the first couple of games? I know that you had a tweet ready to go if they lost that game last night to offer some reassurance, but should Carolina fans be worried right now?
I think after the Georgia Tech game, that performance is definitely worrisome. But I think Clemson's a pretty good team, and they played pretty well. The guys you expect to score, Joel Berry and Justin Jackson, Kenny Meeks, had good games. That's what you needed after a poor performance like you had against Georgia Tech. So I think that Clemson win on the road in a hostile environment was huge to get back on track. And I think UNC's kind of where they were entering the Georgia Tech game, you know, cautious optimism coming off of the Kentucky win and the Monmouth win. So as long as Joel Berry and Justin Jackson played a high level, which they have, I'd say, for the majority of the season,
yeah,
they will be, I think this team will be solid. But if those guys have bad games, I think we'll get into this later on,
yeah,
that's when UNC's you know, offense and production have some questions.
And that's what we saw against Georgia Tech. And, of course, Carolina's got a big game against NC State coming up. First home game for the Tar Heels in conference play. But, Stephen, what have you seen so far from the first couple of games from the Tar Heels? And also, you know, is there anything that needs to be done to kind of expand where that scoring is coming from?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm not quite as rosy as on all this as Ross is, because I really felt like prior to that Georgia Tech game, like, this team just felt really sturdy to me. I do a lot in Fayetteville with both Duke and NC State, and both of those teams, for various reasons, are kind of works in progress. Obviously, Duke's had 1.5 million curveballs thrown its way, and you know, guys that weren't available. State has a bunch of guys that are in their first season playing together, and they've also had some hurdles along the way as well. So when I was watching Carolina through the preseason, with the exception of those two games when Joel Berry was hurt, I felt very, very good about that group, because these were guys that have played together. They knew who they were. They knew what they had to do to win. And I just didn't worry about them. And so then when you had that game against Georgia Tech that just seemed to come out of nowhere. I mean, Georgia Tech is not a good team. I think they're a little better than maybe people thought. But still, this is a team that every other ACC power is going to be able to handle. And so to just go down there and lose like that, where, yeah, it wasn't just a fluky, you know, shot falls somewhere along the way. It was, they just got beat.
A&T played Georgia Tech closer than, yeah, Carolina did, like, 3 days before.
I didn't think Georgia Tech was that good in that game either.
No.
They didn't shoot a high percentage. But do you think it was just kind of a blip on the radar, a kind of a weird timed game between Christmas and New Year's and that flukiness? Or do you think it's showing a trend of a team that's not going to be consistent, that is going to have some of these games throughout the season that they're going to have poor performances and play like they did against Tech?
I think probably the latter, but what I think is so worrisome is I thought this team was beyond that. That, you know, that just those games when, for whatever reason, they're just not there. I really thought that this team was beyond that. I mean, because these guys have been through a lot together. They've,
yeah,
seen, you know, everything you can see. So then to just come out and lay an egg like that in a season when you're going to be keeping pace, you're trying to keep pace with a lot of other really good teams in the ACC, it was just stunning. And I think it added a degree of worry that I didn't think was there.
There was a lot of talk going into that of North Carolina being, you know, now the team to beat in the,
yeah,
ACC, you know, even surpassing Duke. People not saying they're more talented overall player by player than Duke, but that kind of team,
yeah,
well-rounded team that you're talking about, because we've said before on this show, you can't have Joel and Justin both have a bad game. And I'm going to throw,
right,
a little bit of an excuse out here of saying that it didn't seem like Joel was fully recovered from any kind of bug he was working over, which he and Roy, it seemed like, had Ross in that Monmouth game. Is that a worthy excuse, or is it just a bad game?
Yeah, I mean, when you're sick, it's hard to play successful basketball. And I mean, it seems like he was healthy and he played great. And you're seeing when he does not play well, when he's not 100%, whether it be his foot or sickness or whatever his injury was, mm-hmm. they don't play well. And that's just a direct correlation. You've had two games. Davidson, Tennessee, he did not play well. Or he didn't play, and UNC struggled. Right, and then Monmouth and Georgia Tech, he didn't play well, and UNC looked a little shaky. So it comes down to Joel Berry, and then it comes down to Justin Jackson producing, and even the big man doing enough. And you saw Kenny Meeks had another double-double, and that was huge for UNC. And he's coming around to being a very consistent rebounder, which is big, and that's kind of UNC's bread and butter there. So those three players are at least some semblance of a big man dominance, whether it be Hicks, Bradley, Kenny Meeks, or all of them combined, is big for UNC.
Yeah, I think the big men overall really need to do a lot more if UNC is going to be that team to beat in the conference. But we'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes. To talk a little more about that Clemson game, we did see healthy Joel Berry in the second half. I mean, he went on a stretch there. 19 of UNC's 23 points over about a 7-minute stretch, I think it was, came from Joel Berry. And it wasn't just hitting the shot. He was getting into it emotionally a little bit, Stephen, as well, like showing off the muscles a little bit
there. Yeah, I mean, that swagger and that confidence, that's something that that UNC seems to really feed off of. I mean, and that's something, you know, he's been doing that for them since last season. I mean, he's just the heartbeat of that team. And like you said, you see when he's not out there, when he's not himself, they are just – they look lost. And but yeah, he's fantastic, and he showed it, you know, last night. He's an all ACC first teamer in my book. I mean, he's I think as good as any guard.
He plays with such confidence, and like he goes out there thinking he's the best player.
Yeah.
He has this kind of aura around him. He's not very outgoing in person. I mean, he will talk to you, but he's not like Marcus Paige, where everyone loves him. He kind of keeps himself a little bit. And he just has this confidence to him. Like when he goes out there, he thinks he knows he's the best. He plays like he's the best. And that's huge for a team, knowing you have a guy that can kind of get that basket, can play tough and lead the team. And he was shooting threes from way out, and he's always been good at driving the lane and making those tough baskets. And it was just huge. I mean, his percentages, 7-for-10 from three, 12-for-19 from the field, was incredible. Compared to Jackson, who's been shooting a lot and kind of having poor percentages, but still putting up points, but just
Justin's
8-for-20 last night.
A little bit inconsistent, I think, more than anything, is that his numbers at the end of the day, scoring line, may look relatively similar, but he has those games as well where he shoots 7 out of 10 from three, which, you know, one thing that's different with this UNC's team is that you've got three guys that are shooting at or over 40% from three so far this season, which isn't something that Carolina has had to fall back on. But I think going back to what you were saying about last year's Joel Berry, I think Joel Berry thought he was the best player on the team last year as well. And maybe was a little bit reserved in that because of respect for Marcus and Bryce as seniors on that team. But I think, especially as you saw it in the tournament, he thought he was the best player on that team last year. And I don't think he may not have been wrong. You know, I think Bryce was obviously had an unbelievable season, but as far as the backcourt goes.
Yeah, but I think there's a flip side of that too. Like, while it's wonderful that Carolina has this guy that can do that, it's kind of scary to see just how reliant they are on him.
Yeah,
they're
one
just,
player.
It's if you can get in Joel's way and he's not Joel, then the Tar Heels just don't seem like themselves.
UNC's teams are always built around three or four players.
Yeah.
Rarely just one player dominates. I mean, you look at the championship teams, Rashawn McCann, Raymond Felton, Sean May, Marvin Williams, Jawad Williams. I mean, those were five players who could score 15 points a game.
Yeah.
2009 team with Lawson, Ellington, Hansberry. I mean, those guys, Lawson, Ellington, and Hansberry were three kind of all ACC type guys.
Right.
Danny Green, too, has had a 6-7-8 year career in the NBA, and his teams are built by inside outside and three or four players who can, you know, get some points and score the ball.
It's one of those things that we'll talk about here in a minute in terms of the overall view of the team that is certainly a different feel this year than it has last year or last few years for UNC, specifically under Roy Williams. And I wonder if it's a little bit of if we expected too much from some of these freshmen coming in, or, you know, I don't know if Nate Britt has even regressed a little bit as a basketball player. I don't know if his confidence is gone or whatever the case may be. But we'll talk about the overall state of the team and what really needs to change going forward into what's really going to toughen up as far as an ACC schedule. Whenever we get back here on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM WCHL, this is Tar Heel Talk. UNC 1-1 on the ACC slate so far. A surprise loss to Georgia Tech to start out the ACC slate on New Year's Eve. Come back this Tuesday night with a victory on the road and overtime, 3-point win over Clemson. And one thing that we didn't talk about that was really the buzz last night was the little bit of a showdown in the handshake line. Brad Brownell was really, really not happy with Roy Williams about something. Some people initially speculated it was a late layup by Kenny Williams, but with as close as that game was, I would have a hard time finding any kind of rationale behind that. There seemed to be some trash talk going on. Maybe Kennedy Meeks aiming it at the Clemson sideline. Obviously, Stephen, you have been around for a long time covering this, so I'm going to point this to you because I immediately got a text from my dad talking about Rick Barnes.
Yeah.
So that's immediately what everybody was thinking about, I guess.
Crazy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the context for that, obviously, Rick Barnes comes to Clemson in the mid-90s. Clemson had not had a tradition of basketball success, and one of the things he did to really galvanize his team and get the fan base, you know, sort of like establish the identity for his team was he went right at Dean there were a couple of fairly tense moments there, and I think one of them, Dean said something to a Clemson player, and Barnes came and said, "Don't talk to my players," and it was very heated.
Is that what the picture is from, that moment?
I think so, possibly.
I think that was the most. That was the most.
One pitcher there one season.
And it really did. Like, it really did set the tone for that Clemson team at a time when the rest of the ACC had these, you know, Mount Rushmore coaches there. Clemson was a team that just wasn't afraid of anybody and had a little mini run of success. But the thing I kept thinking about last night, you know, when that game was coming down the stretch and there were moments where Clemson needed to, you know, make a free throw or make a play to win, I kept thinking, okay, Clemson, if you're an old time Clemson fan, you're sitting here thinking, like, I know I've seen this movie before, and I know how it ends.
You're a Carolina football fan, basically.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and you're just like, this is not going to work out in the end. And sure, lo and behold, it didn't. And so, if you're Brad Brownell and you're going through that handshake line, and you know that this is the same thing that always happens, you had Carolina dead to rights, and you didn't win, I can understand how just about anything would set you off. And so that probably, I think all those ghosts and all of Brad Brownell's awareness of how this series has gone over the years probably weighed into
the tipping point of frustration there.
Yeah.
Oh, such a bad look for him, though, to come at Roy with a finger. And Roy, I don't think, knew what he was talking about.
Right, yeah, clearly.
So basically, I don't know if we set it up, but, you know, before the game was over, Roy kind of headed over to handshake to shake his hand, and Brad Brownell came in with a finger and started yelling at him. And Roy was like, I'm sorry. And I don't think he knew what was going on. And
he looked confused.
He's like, what happened? And then we found out, I think, that Kenny Meeks had said some stuff to the Clemson bench, and we believe that's what...
According to people on Twitter.
Yeah, according to Twitter.
Yeah, right?
I mean, because Roy wouldn't talk about it after the game, and I don't think anybody's surprised by that, but he said, that's between me and Brad, and it'll stay between me and Brad.
But Brad was mad, and he just came at Roy, and like, I mean, it's not like Roy told Meeks to talk crap to the bench, you know? And it was kind of crazy. And I mean, they kind of, you know, Tar Heel loyalists. So I mean, like, why are you coming at this Hall of Fame coach when clearly he didn't do anything wrong? The layup wasn't a big deal. That obviously wasn't it. And so it was bizarre. And that's going to be a moment you see on Vines and Twitter, and that this coach coming at Roy Williams with a finger in his face.
I don't think Roy could have handled it any better.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
But I was saying, that makes two out of the last three games that Roy's had, like, touchy handshakes. Wasn't there some weirdness with King Rice?
Oh, yeah, with
and
King.
This one?
So I didn't see that. King, you kind of heard about it.
I think King was really not happy with the celebration on the bench over the biscuits. 100 biscuit mark
for
everybody.
Seventh, didn't someone dunk?
Seventh did dunk at the end of
the end or something.
That was, I don't know if that was that game or seventh did dunk at the end as one of those games was out of hand.
It was the 100 points and the crowd went crazy at the end.
And the bench celebrated too because, you know, it was Candler Coker hitting a free throw or whatever it was.
And in the press conference, he said, "You should never be more happy for biscuits than you are to get a win." I think that was kind of a reference to it.
So, but overall, that's kind of the boiling point that people have been talking about for the last couple of days here. But in the second half, you saw Joel Berry be the Joel Berry we expected. As you said, Stephen, that is worrisome that it has UNC is going to have to rely on him. So, what does UNC need to do to supplement some of that scoring? I've been on the big men a lot this year saying there's got to be, you know, we're a little bit spoiled with one of the best post seasons we saw in Carolina history last year with Bryce Johnson. But between the three of them that play a lot, and with Kennedy and Isaiah and Tony as a freshman, I think they've got to really step up. What do you see from Carolina if they're going to, they need to improve?
I don't know. I just think that they have fewer options than maybe we thought they were going to have at this point, because it seems like there hasn't been an offensive evolution for Hicks, and Bradley can look young at points. And the image that I keep thinking about with this team is, there'll be times when you watch them on offense and they'll have really good ball movement. And, it's like just shooting around the perimeter, and one guy has a good shot but passes it up to another guy who's wide open for another shot, an even better shot, and they take it. And then you see who took the shot and you're kind of like, okay, they were getting the ball around the perimeter for like Brandon Robinson to get an open three, or someone like that, it's a perfectly fine players. But if you're the opposing coach, are you really going to lose too much sleep over,
Nate Britt?
Yeah, Nate Britt or Kenny Williams or someone who's maybe not that reliable a three-point shooter. And so I guess that's just the thing that I keep thinking of with the state of this team. The team's not as deep, not just in bodies that they can play in a rotation, but also deep as far as really reliable scoring options, I think.
I think the big men aren't able to create their own shot as much as last year. Bryce Johnson, you throw it to him, he did a jump hook, a fadeaway, post shot. He could get you a basket when you give him the ball. And I think Kenny Meeks is as good, if not better, than last year, but most of his shots are offensive rebounds, little moves. He's been pretty solid. Hicks is taking a step back, I think. He's not being as aggressive. I think he played better with Bryce Johnson kind of taking the attention away from him.
He's been a lot of fadeaways recently from Isaiah.
He's had some flashes. You just want to see him be a little more aggressive. What he had 8 points last night, fouled out again. And then I just think Bradley needs to play more. He played 11 minutes. He needs to be in the rotation. I think right now he's a reserve. He's Kenny Meeks' backup. I think he needs to be in the rotation.
Isaiah gets so many of those ticky-tack fouls that I don't know if it's his reputation or whatever it is, but it seems to get called on him a lot more than it does anybody else kind of in the same situation. Roy's referenced that in the past as well. He breathes on somebody wrong, and he gets a call there. But we're also seeing Roy employ a little bit of a smaller lineup than we've seen a lot in the past, which maybe the evolution of a Hall of Fame coach there that we're seeing before our eyes, kind of going away from needing to have two big guys in there at the same time.
Maybe just realizes that Meeks and Hicks and Bradley can't give him the offense that a guy like Justin and Kenny and Barry can when they're all in together.
I think one other thing that Bryce did last year that maybe we weren't appreciating at the time was facilitating some of the offense to some of those other big guys, and being Kennedy and Isaiah. Sometimes them trying to pass the ball back and forth is one of the ugliest things you can see on a basketball court, I think. So
I remember one game Bryce Johnson had like 8 assists. I think it was against Florida State at Florida.
The masterpiece game. No,
well, it was a game when Syracuse. They guarded him, and then he just hit Hicks for like 8 points. Like he would just keep. It was a high low game, and he hit Hicks, and Hicks had 20 something points. Yeah, and that's not there yet because you don't have that kind of interior passing. That was big. I mean, that was just another aspect of Bryce Johnson's game, which was really, really good.
So we have got the Carolina team that we're looking at, but also, of course, a big game coming up against NC State, and we are going to talk through NC State, Duke, kind of the triangle as a whole from the ACC slate, as well as take a look ahead at that NC State game coming up here in just a minute. Also, we'll wrap up kind of a recap of the Tar Heel football season, finishing up with that loss to Stanford in the Sun Bowl, and of course trying to figure out what's going to happen going forward, specifically with the quarterback situation at Carolina. All that whenever we come back on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM WCHL on Tar Heel Talk. ACC play heating up for the Tar Heels, and we have got an ACC expert in to talk with us today, Stephen Tram from the Fayetteville Observer. We're letting Ross hang out for the whole show also today here on WCHL Tar Heel Talk. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, as always, on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. And as we focus a lot, of course, as you would guess by the name Tar Heel Talk, we focus a lot on Carolina here, but Going into ACC play, we are hoping to get a little bit better of an all-around worldview. And, of course, that doesn't extend beyond the triangle here.
But
talking about Duke and NC State basketball to give us an idea what to expect later on in the season, because we haven't talked about them a whole lot other than going into the season knowing that Duke looked like they were going to be really good, mm-hmm. and State had a couple of really exciting freshmen that were coming in. One of them had some eligibility issues at the beginning of the year, but Stephen, what should we expect looking at kind of the 30,000-foot view from this NC State team, and we'll get a little more into that with that preview coming up here in a few minutes.
Well, I mean, you know, this NC State team like has all the pieces you would want. You know, they've got size, they've got depth, they've got guards that can shoot and guards that can gash you with penetration. I mean, there's a lot to work with. The only problem is that these pieces, you know, NC State over the last couple years has had a lot of turnover with guys transferring out, guys transferring in. You know, guys going pro. And so this team, the majority of it they're playing together for the first time. And then when you throw in some, as you mentioned, some eligibility issues where Amir Yurtseven, their 7-foot Turkish center, missed the first 9 games because of some NCAA issues. You also had a sophomore, Maverick Rowan, who's mm-hmm. kind of an important piece. He missed several games with a concussion, and Ted Capita, a useful bench guy, missed time with some NCAA and then visa issues. So it's this team, you know, the sort of the buzzword in the triangle for at least Duke and NC State has been talking about timelines, saying this team isn't yet in that early January mode. They're still a few months behind because they're coming together, and I think that's what NC State's dealing with right now. But they you know, they have one of the best players in the conference in Dennis Smith Jr.
He's been exciting to watch.
He's a Fayetteville guy. I think I'm contractually obligated to say that every time that he is from Fayetteville, or else the Fayetteville Observer people won't, my swipe card won't get me in the door anymore. But no, he's fantastic. He's been really explosive and able to get to the rim all year long. His shot hasn't always been falling, but the last couple games, you know, the last few weeks, it started to fall, which has made him just such a more incredible weapon. And you know, he's just incredible. This team kind of had to get itself together a little bit, but then they had this run of some nice, easy home games where they just blew people out and looked like we all thought they were. They lost at Miami on Saturday, but I think that's a little forgivable because I think Miami's a good team, and this was on the road, and again with a fairly new team. But I'm sure that the game, you know, the game in Chapel Hill is something that they certainly circle. There are a lot of familiar faces still there from the game 2 years ago when they were able to come to the Smith Center and win. So I don't think there's going to be much of an intimidation factor, and I think they're going to come in and they could very much give Carolina a game.
What are some of the strengths or what are some of the weaknesses of this team? Like, what's giving them issues? Is it just young youth or what's the issue with them and things that hold them back this season?
No, I think sometimes when Dennis Smith can't get get online, they can be a little limited. Also, you know, they'll have these inexplicable games when they just can't seem to stop teams. Like one of the things that was the hallmark of this team early on was they would have these teams at home, you know, these Loyola Chicago's, Boston University's, Georgia Southern, even though it's a bad example because they're actually pretty good, but like these teams that you'd think you should beat by 20 points, and then they'd come in and it would be a 2-point game because the team just couldn't sustain its focus, couldn't play the kind, you know, make the stops down the stretch, and they just find themselves in these predicaments that they have to work their way out of, and I think that's kind of been where that newness of this group shows.
Yeah. Is it all just Dennis Smith? I mean, if he has a bad game, they have a bad game?
In a Joel Berry type way.
Yeah. But again, I think that's going to change moving forward because he's, you know, everyone around him is going to get more time together. But also he's, you know, he is not afraid to share the ball. I mean, this guy had 16 assists in one game. I mean, I know last year with NC State, Cat Barber was their high-scoring guard, and he was nowhere near the facilitator that Dennis Smith can be. So I think there's a little bit of a difference there. But really, you know, this team has all the pieces. It's just getting that that perfect formula, that perfect chemistry, that perfect mix to have them actually deliver on, and to be as good or better than the sum of their parts.
And recognizing, you know, with all these new guys that it's their first ACC game and all these other things, that, you know, Gottfried with the quote the other day, you show up with your cool jacket on, you're going to get your ass kicked. That's the bottom
that's
line.
About so, right, yeah.
They've got a big game. We're recording this on Wednesday. They have got a big game before the Carolina game. They've got to take care of business against a Virginia Tech team that's 12-1 on the season. Buzz Williams doing a great job up there, I think, as everybody expected him to do, maybe a little ahead of the overall timeline. Yeah, beat Duke.
Oh, that Buzz Williams hire was great.
That was a home run.
I was so surprised when he went there from Marquette.
He was ready to go. And Virginia Tech, you know, it's not a bad job. You get a chance to build a program and play against some of the top talent as far as players and coaches, and I'm sure that's a challenge that he was eager to accept.
But still, no, I agree. What a home run!
Yeah,
hire by
I always
them.
Liked him. Just the enthusiasm.
I mean, goodness gracious!
And you know, beat that. You know, as we mentioned, did beat Duke. What's going on there, Steve? I don't know if that's a fair question.
I don't know. This Duke team. I mean, when you looked at them on paper before the season, you're thinking this could be an all-time Duke team. I mean, you have experience. Yeah. You have, you know, one and dones. You've got just this. Everything you need, everything you possibly need, all the pieces are there, and they're really, really good. And then for whatever reason, it just has been like a hex has been on this team. I mean, I think they're like, to me, they're just three completely surreal images that I can close my eyes and picture with this group. You know, one, just at the start when you had Harry Giles, consensus number one pick, or number one, you know, recruit, potential number one pick.
Number one pick next year.
Yeah. Jason Tatum, another lottery pick. And then Marquise Bolden, their, you know, top 20 recruit. And they're all starting the season in golf shirts at the end of the bench, which that's a nightmare image
for
you.
Not ideal.
That's just right. You're like, what on earth? And then, you know, and then as soon as they get back healthy, then you have Grayson Allen, the Grayson Allen tripping saga, volume 3, which was just like, what on earth? Like, you know, this is after this off season where he was rehabbing his image and going and saying the mea culpas, and I'm sure reassuring people both outside and inside the program that this is all behind him.
Been working really hard on not tripping.
Yeah,
people
exactly.
The funniest thing is all those ESPN things on the tripping, and he does it again.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course the other day when, you know, Krzyzewski announces that he's going to have back surgery.
He's going to
be out for a month. And you're just like what's I was making the joke, and it, you know, it's terrible, especially given, you know, what this program has been around. But it's like, all you need is like an NCAA investigation, and you've got like bingo for just awful things that can happen to a program. Just injury problems, on court discipline weirdness, a coach injury, and then
we don't joke around with NCAA.
I know.
Stuff
all you need is some just off court scandal, and then it's just complete. The it's the home run
allowing Jeff Capel. I don't think he needs a whole lot more of an interview process. I think he's pretty much in line there, but giving him another chance here right in the heart of ACC play, go see what see what you can pull out here.
I'm surprised we didn't mention that at the top of the show, the fact that Coach K, you know, is indefinitely out. You know, month and a half.
I've heard 4 weeks, and I know Capel on the radio show the other night was saying that they would be surprised if it would be the full 4 weeks that they would expect him back. Because, I mean, look, guys, it is early January. Like, there are some important stuff happening over this next month. To take this time off for a team that has, you know, really the standard of just it's national championship or bust for these guys. That is it.
Yeah. So running through the next few games, they've got Georgia Tech on Wednesday night, and then Boston College over the weekend, Florida State, Louisville, Miami, NC State, Wake Forest, Notre Dame, and that's just the rest of January.
Yeah, I mean, and really, it's just not going to be a break because the ACC is so much, I think, even deeper than we thought.
Yeah, the game to circle, I mean, they have North Carolina on February 9th, which is about, you know, a month and a couple of days. So, if it goes longer than a month, he's going to miss that game.
Can we get a tracker going with who's back first, Kay or Theo?
You know, Jeff Capel, who's another Fayetteville guy, again, if there's a little buzzer
check,
or something.
Yeah, check mark.
You know, he's his own man. Like, if you're going to hand him the keys for this month, it's not like he's – and you saw it last year when Kay was hospitalized with a heart issue. He went down to Virginia Tech, and they played a different style than they've been playing or they went down to Georgia Tech and got a big win for them last year, and he played a different style, used some different rotations, played some more man-to-man defense. So, like,
He's been a head coach, too.
Yeah, he's been a head coach. He's taken it. He coached Blake Griffin, for God's sakes. Yeah. Took him to the Elite Eight.
Sure, Kay and Cape will be meeting, you know, all the time. I'm sure there'll be a lot of conversations there. Yeah. And what's funny, you got John Shire on the bench. He's been on the bench. And you got Nolan Smith now. Mm-hmm. Both those guys are younger than me. That's pretty crazy. You have two guys in their 20s who are now assistant, full-time assistants now, because Nolan Smith was that kind of camera video guy, coordinator, fourth assistant, whatever. They move him now to the bench. So you have two guys from that 2010 championship team that are now assistant coaches.
Like, I covered all those guys. I feel so old.
I think that's a Duke model, though, that we've seen in the past, is that, you know, if the playing career is not something that either you really want to pursue or just isn't working out, and you're a certain type of player, you can find a way back on the bench.
I saw Nolan Smith on the kickball field this summer.
Oh, he bringing it?
Yeah, we didn't play against him, but he was there with his team.
Good for you.
personal anecdote.
All right, well, we are going to take our last quick break here. We're going to be back on the other side talking UNC, NC State, and then we'll take a look at the recap of the UNC football season as well as the Tar Heels lose to Stanford in the Sun Bowl. But we will talk NC State and recap of the football season when we get back on Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Blake Hodge, Ross Martin, and Stephen Tram from the Fayetteville Observer joining us this week as we have got a full ACC slate. Carolina 1-1, a little bit, maybe not a surprise at 1-1. I think that people could have swallowed 1-1. Maybe they would have anticipated those losses being flipped there, beating Georgia Tech, losing at Clemson, but two road games to start the ACC slate, so a little bit quirk there, and then you come back 1-1 for the first home game, and it's NC State, so a big game coming up on Saturday for the Tar Heels. Before we talk about that, we do want to go back and talk a little bit about the football season that has now wrapped up, 8-5. Is that right, Ross, for our final record?
Man.
So it is what it is. You know,
coming off an 11-3 season with, I think, a more talented team coming back, really, I mean, Trubisky, all the wide receivers, the running backs.
The whole offense back except for Quinshon.
Yeah, right. I think the main culprit here was losing Matt Collins and then a kind of offensive line that was not as good as last year.
And Landon Turner, some injuries up there, too.
Caleb Pearson was their best offensive lineman. Kind of disappointing. You know, you lose to State, you lose to Duke, you drop a winnable game to Georgia Tech. Drop a winnable game to Georgia in the opener, and UNC's yet to kind of win that big SEC opening game. Two chances in 2 years, lost both. And then the Virginia Tech game was just fluky, and Virginia Tech kind of Virginia Tech's kind of a legit team, so that game was kind of all right. We lost that game.
And then in the middle of a hurricane, Elijah Hood wasn't playing in that game.
The main thing was losses to Duke, NC State, and losing the bowl game. And Fedora's now 0-3 in the last three bowl games. Mm. They finished the season losing 3 out of 4. So it's a...
And we knew Stanford was a good team, but this wasn't the full complement Stanford either. With Christian McCaffrey being out, the quarterback hurts his knee early on in that game, early enough on in the game that was a big factor. But just on, I mean, three turnovers from Mitch was not something you expect. And more than anything, he looked like he got tricked twice with coverage that was a bit surprising to me. He still made some unbelievable throws in that game that the CBS Gary Danielson, I believe his name was foaming at the mouth over. But a couple of those, the two interceptions, looked like he just got tricked with coverage. So we don't know what that means. Probably nothing for his overall decision to come back or not. But we still, as of this recording on Wednesday, don't know whether Mitch is coming back or not.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that pick six was kind of what lost the game for UNC. You know, the referee fumbled.
Oh, God.
He got knocked by the referee and the ball popped out. It was bizarre. Yeah, I was watching with some Carolina fans, and they were like, man, he's going to come back now. That was a bad performance. But he led the team on a 97-yard scoring drive. I don't think this game changes what scouts think. They're going to look at the whole body of work.
And they still saw him make across-the-field throws that were on the money and be gutsy enough to throw it into some tight spaces and get it there on some of those throws.
Mobile.
Yeah, I mean, he checked all the boxes still for a scout.
So in year in review here, obviously a big disappointment for UNC football. You think that momentum, you like to see that momentum continue into this year. Now they lose a lot of big seniors. They don't return. You know, they lose three offensive linemen, three wide receivers, TJ Logan, potentially Mitch Trubisky, Des Lawrence, Nazir Jones, Dominique Green. And so it's a rebuild, especially on the offensive line and wide receivers. You have whole new names. So it's been interesting how they do next year. They have a tough schedule with Notre Dame coming in, some other teams they face. And so this is kind of, you know, this is a sixth year for Dora. It's crazy. Yeah, He's one of the second longest coaches.
Tenured coach, right.
And
I mean, you've got MJ Stewart coming back on the defense. So you've got like 7 of 11 starters is one way to say that on the defense coming back. But you are really losing a lot on a team that, I mean, the defense hasn't been the stalwart of this team. You know, it's been the offense. So losing that many, not just players, but influential, game-changing players on the offensive side is scary to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, without Trubisky, potentially, then you have a new quarterback throwing to completely new receivers. Yeah. And the reason why Mark Weiss Williams and Trubisky were really good is they had some really good receivers who got open.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot. And it's very hard to – I mean, it's hard to get open and have, give a good window for people to pass to you. So should be interesting next year whether it's another step back, a 7-8-win season, or if they can – you know, maybe play above their expectations and win 8, 9, 10, which would probably be a great season next year. So kind of now it's Fedora is here. It's kind of where is this program going after kind of a peak where they maintain or drop down to a valley.
But overall, I think it has to be a disappointing football season. So let's move on, shall we? We've got the big game coming up on Saturday. Of course, NC State has got a game against Virginia Tech. Tonight, again, we're recording this Wednesday. So Carolina playing against an NC State team on Saturday that, Stephen, you broke down a little bit for us earlier with a lot of moving parts. What should Carolina fans be looking at most whenever NC State comes in? Is it just sit back and enjoy Dennis Smith while he's here?
I think it's to be sit back and enjoy Dennis Smith and Joel Berry go against each other because that's going to be – those are two high-level guards and two just –
they're competitors,
dead
too.
Serious competitors, too. Like, they're just not going to give an inch. I think that's going to be a fun matchup to watch. I think it's also just going to be what happens inside. I mean, B.J. Anya, I think, had just, like, a career game here in that win.
Yeah.
I mean, was just blocking shots and dictating so much.
About 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago with the win here in the Smith Center. You know, Kennedy Meeks had some wonderful moments against Clemson, but he also had some of those moments where a lot of Carolina fans – you know, would just, hey, man, I wish you could really finish at the rim a little better. And it's not going to be easy because they've got a 7-footer in Yurt Seven, just a long-arm shot-blocking menace, hard-to-move guy in B.J. Anya. And inside, there's just going to be – it's just going to be this weird mishmash of guys who can look great one day and look not great the next.
On both
when
sides.
When you're throwing Isaiah Hicks and B.J. or
Tony Bradley.
Tony Bradley, but also like Abdul Malik Abu for NC State. Mm-hmm. Like these guys, there's so many of these players that have these wild fluctuations in how they play, and they're all going to be going against each other down in the post. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch. This NC State team, this is going to be one of those show me moments. Like if you're as special as you think you are, what do you do here? And likewise with Carolina, I think it would soothe a lot of worried Tar Heel fans to see them just handle these guys.
Carolina lost this game. That would not be good.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So
panic.
I think they have a lot more to lose. One thing I love about Roy Williams is that he loves beating State.
Yes.
He hates State.
Yes.
I feel like he respects Duke, kind of like most Carolina fans. Kind of respect Duke, but hate State.
Oh, yeah.
I think he just grew up in North Carolina with a lot of friends who were
State. And at that point, that was the rivalry.
Yeah.
And it was NC State.
Yeah, I think he's only lost him twice.
You might be right. Yeah, I mean, we're all North Carolina natives here. It's like the Duke Carolina thing is, you know, that belongs to everybody that lives in ESPN and all that. Whereas like the NC State Carolina one, man, that's fought in office cubicles, dining room tables.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so much more of an intimate rivalry in this state than Duke Carolina will ever be. And so I think Roy, you know, being a kid who grew up in Black Mountain, understands that and knows that the people on his side really don't want to lose to these guys.
So we have got an exciting one coming up on Saturday, and of course you can hear that game right here on WCHL. Stephen, thank you so much
for
stopping
me,
by. Stephen Tram from the Fayetteville Observer. I'm not sure what your Twitter handle is, but we'll
give it.
It's at Stephen Tram with a PH on Stephen and SCHRAMM.
There you go.
That's me.
Ross Martin is at boss_Martin247.
Yes.
There you go. So you can give them a follow on Twitter. Thanks so much for hanging out with us for a little while. Carolina and State on Saturday, a big game for both sides to show what they have got going into the heart of the ACC slate. This is Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM WCHL. From Stephen Tram, Ross Martin, I'm Blake Hodge. This is Tar Heel Talk.